Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. Prisons and jails all over the country each year accommodate Muslims who observe Ramadan's month-long daily fasts without issue and without the court's intervention. But the Washington Department of Corrections has committed itself to a policy that ensures that some Muslims will be excluded from receiving food as they observe Ramadan's fast. Now, the way that those policies exclude people are in twofold. On one hand, because the Washington Department of Corrections has what the district court called an artificially early sign-up process, people that arrive at the facilities late or somehow miss the sign-up deadline for whatever reason can't participate in Ramadan, even if the facility has a month or 2 months or weeks of notice. On the other hand, the Ramadan policy excludes people who, like John James, have celiac disease and require that their medical diets, a gluten-free diet, be continued to be served to them during Ramadan. The district court overlooked these things and dismissed the case as moot, found that the grievances were not fully exhausted, and accorded the defendants qualified immunity. I want to start with that last part first, the district court's decision to give qualified immunity to the individual capacity defendants. Here, the Ninth Circuit for decades now has spoken clearly and without ambiguity about the prisons and jails obligations to provide a religiously adequate meal to those that are in its custody. As long ago as 1987, in McAllier v. Babbitt, the Ninth Circuit said, quote, "Inmates also have the right to be provided with food sufficient to sustain them in good health that satisfies the dietary laws of their religion," unquote. And years later, 6 years later, in the early 90s, in Ward v. Walsh, one of the most important Ninth Circuit precedents in this context, it used the word established specifically. In McElyea, quote, "In McElyea, we established the principle that inmates have the right to be provided with food that satisfies the dietary laws of their religion." The qualified immunity, the clearly established law at issue in this case, is the prison's obligation to provide those in its custody with a meal that satisfies their religious obligations. In this case, for Naeem Lau, Jeremy Livingston, and the rest of the plaintiffs, those folks required a meal to be served to them so they could eat after sunset and before dawn as Muslims observe Ramadan.
Counsel, what case says that the prison can't enact or require a sign-up process before giving out those meals?
There is no case on all fours that says that a 3 month or 4 month advance notice sign up process falls.
Right. So how do you win the clearly established prong then with that concession?
Well, in Boyd, this court also said that a case doesn't necessarily need to be on all fours for the law to be clearly established. And here, how we would urge the court to view it, the clearly established law is that the prison jail must provide a religiously adequate meal to its inmates. The fact that they're requiring a sign-up process before that in an effort to exclude some people from those religiously adequate meals is the deviation from the clearly established precedent.
Let's imagine, Mr. Abbas, that we take your first point, with which we agree, presumably, because it's the law about being entitled to a religiously appropriate diet. And so on the first day of Ramadan, the person says, I would like to have my meal. Do you think that that person, without any advance notice, would be, as a matter of law, entitled to that meal?
The prison would be obligated to do what it can do to provide that inmate with a meal. in this case, these are, and at issue here, these are TV-style microwavable meals that are no different than the halal meals that are provided to Muslims throughout Washington Department of Corrections facility across the state, which can be ordered, you know, with hours notice, days notice.
That's the point. So, and I agree with you that if it's feasible, but let's say even on that point, let's say there's not a long lead time as you have here, but the prison says, you know, I hear you and I would give it to you, but I order these meals with some precision, and therefore that meal is, we have not made advance arrangements for that meal. Would that official be entitled to qualified immunity?
I don't think so. I think that the question would be, and this happens all the time in prisons and jails, there's some paperwork snafu. Like, for instance, in this case, Roberts, the evidence indicates and his testimony reflects that he did sign up and they just, it looks like, lost the paperwork for it. And so what happens at lots of prisons and jails, if someone, for whatever reason, is not on a Ramadan list, it's a prison, it's a facility, they'll go to the kitchen like they did in this case in response to the temporary restraining order. They'll gather some food and they'll provide it to the inmate on an ad hoc basis until some more durable arrangement can be provided. And I think that's what the wisdom of the Ninth Circuit's precedent in Ward and McElyea reflects, that it's a prison or a jail with food stocks that exist. And these are not difficult things for prisons and jails to accommodate. They have food. The question is, are they willing to give it to them? And in this case, especially, the grievance reflect that for Muhammad, that the food, the cafeteria folks, the food service people, they wanted to accommodate. They learned at the very beginning of Ramadan that he was without food, and the reason he did not sign up for Ramadan was that his initial release date was before the start of Ramadan 2018. It got pushed back till after Ramadan 2018, so he asked to sign up at the beginning of Ramadan. The food service people said, okay, we can do it, but it was the policy folks that said we will not do it because of the policy. So that's, I think, a very important point here. What they could have done to avoid liability was the easiest thing in the world for them to do. Naeem Lau, for instance, who was threatened with being force-fed, in his grievances, he proposed, well, why don't you just let me go to the main line, get food with everybody else, put it in a to-go container or a bag, and I'll eat it up myself. That way, no one has to do anything different than they're already doing. And they said no.
Didn't they accommodate him, Mr. Lau, after day eight?
Yes, Your Honor. They did end up accommodating him after a number of days during Ramadan 2018.
Can I pivot with that question to the administrative remedies? I'm sorry, exhaustion question. Since he was given relief, doesn't that mean that he exhausted his administrative remedies?
Well, Your Honor, he wasn't given relief in accordance with a grievance. He was really, what happened as a kind of an informal matter, I think, that after Naeem Lau was threatened with being force-fed against his, quote, Ramadan hours, against his religious beliefs, that the facility officials stepped back from the brink and realized that it would just be easier for everybody involved to provide him food rather than not provide him food. And so they didn't change the policy. They didn't validate his grievance.
But wouldn't it be to your client's advantage that he was given relief and that he did complete the grievance process? So then there's no question about his exhaustion.
Yes, Your Honor, that would be a fair way of looking at it, in terms of he was provided the relief that he was seeking in the grievance form. But on the other hand, he was not provided that relief via the grievance process, and he was not provided that level one stage of grievances is the stage of grievance where you could actually challenge the policy itself. And so the policy remained the same as it was when he grieved. And I think I asked you
about that. You know, obviously these prison grievance policies pose a barrier for prisoners. There's no doubt about that. But given the timing, could he have not actually, once his grievance was converted to a non-emergent grievance, he didn't appeal that. Is that right?
He did not appeal the distinction, the conclusion that his grievance was not emergency, a non-emergency grievance, because there was no appellate mechanism for appealing that determination that the grievance itself was not an emergency. And so
let me just ask you though, then whether it was emergency or non-emergency, his appeal would have implicated the policy, would it not? Had he gone ahead with his appeal, and that would, if it went through, would have taken care of the main issue that you're talking about, to get established what the prison should or shouldn't do.
Well, that's not the position that the defendants have taken in this case. The position that the defendants have taken is that once the month of Ramadan is over, that there's nothing to grieve and there's no remedy for them to provide. And that's what I think underscores the strength of the exhaustion arguments that the appellants make.
But I think on that point, you know, I think that's an unreasonable position to take, because it's damned if you do, damned if you don't problem.
Exactly.
But it would still not, so we don't have to necessarily take Mr. Fulner and his and the state at face value on that, because if you could have gone ahead to file a grievance really on that whole policy, then Lau may not have been even a plaintiff here, correct? If he got satisfaction and a ruling.
If the grievance process could fit within 30 days, fit within the month of Ramadan, and produce an outcome, that's kind of the tradition, that would be an available PLRA remedy. But I think the issue here, the fundamental issue on the question of exhaustion, is truly what was available in terms of a remedy for these Muslims who were in prison. And the government's own documents and testimony show that the full exhaustion of a grievance process, you're looking at 90 days. That's what they target, is 90 days for exhaustion. And so it is important to plaintiff's arguments here that for Naeem Lau, for Jeremy Livingston, for Roberts, that there is that unavailability of the administrative remedy. But then for John James, who's serving a life sentence.
Can I ask you a question? So you're not saying that the fact that each day that goes by in Ramadan, that they're not getting their meals, that is because the process could take up to 90 days, each day is not a violation that requires a remedy?
Well, each day does require a remedy, but the overall, the injury is the denial of food after sunset and before dawn that was accorded. And that injury certainly existed on multiple days for all of the plaintiffs. But the resolution of that injury should have, if the grievance procedure was working appropriately, should have resulted in a change of policy and food being given to all of these folks.
You want to save your remaining time?
Yes, Your Honor. Yes, thank you. Yes.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Your Honors, and may it please the court. Assistant Attorney General Tim Fulner on behalf of Secretary Sinclair and the remaining Department of Corrections defendants. The department has a simple sign-up process for those individuals who wish to participate in its Ramadan meal program. Under that process, incarcerated individuals must complete a one-page form and provide it to the facility chaplain within a designated sign-up period. This process is designed to facilitate and allow the department to accommodate Muslim inmates who wish to participate in its Ramadan meal program. this application of that process to plaintiffs in 2018 did not violate their clearly established constitutional rights. As such, the district court correctly dismissed their claims on summary judgment. This court can affirm for three primary reasons. First, defendants were entitled to qualified immunity because they did not violate plaintiffs' clearly established First or Eighth Amendment rights. Second, any claim for injunctive relief was moot by the time of the proceedings in the district court at summary judgment. And third, plaintiffs had failed to exhaust their administrative remedies as required by the PLRA prior to the filing of the amended complaint. Before I turn to the issue of qualified immunity, though, I want to make an important clarification about the department's application to its grievance process. Contrary to what has been said about the defendant's position is that there's no policy in the Washington Department of Corrections that would render someone's grievance moot after the passage of Ramadan. And we know that because Mr. James himself continued to pursue his grievance in 2018 after the end of Ramadan. The defendants have never made that argument at any stage in these proceedings. Clearly, people can seek relief through the department's process for past injuries. They can seek relief in terms of a change of policy. Nothing supports the idea that the defendants have made that argument or that that's their position. You can clearly, as Mr. James did, seek some kind of administrative relief for past injuries. In terms of the question of qualified immunity.
Before you turn to qualified immunity, I do have an exhaustion question for you. And that relates to Livingston. It seemed to me that Livingston was in one of those situations where he was told you might need to either rewrite and or more information. So he supplies his more information, and he even speaks with the grievance coordinator, who doesn't say, no, you actually have to rewrite the thing. I don't see why it would be reasonable to say that he has not exhausted his filing at that point.
Ultimately, he failed to exhaust, Your Honor, because he had the opportunity to appeal that, and he's never testified that he misunderstood that opportunity. In fact, when he was asked in his deposition, he said he didn't appeal. So while he did have that conversation with the grievance coordinator understood the issue to be resolved. He had an opportunity, if he disagreed with that, to appeal the grievance coordinator's decision. He didn't do that. And he never testified in the district court that he misunderstood or anything like that in terms of what he could do next if he disagreed.
If you disagree with the district court's finding on Mr. Livingston, then with respect to the factual issue?
I do, Your Honor, because for a couple of reasons. First of all, the district court premised its ruling on the idea that he either misunderstood the process or was intimidated from pursuing his grievance. They didn't make the intimidation argument in the district court or in this court on Livingston, and they didn't make the misrepresentation argument in this court for sure, and I don't think they really made it very clearly in the district court. Ultimately, I think in order to support that kind of argument, they need testimony from Mr. Livingston, not just argument. And he was asked, did you appeal? And he said, no, he didn't provide any explanation of, no, I didn't think I had that opportunity. And just as a matter of common sense, if you disagree with someone's decision, like the grievance coordinator, it would make sense that if he wants to continue to pursue the issue, that he would take that up and have it reviewed by someone else. Without any testimony that he didn't understand he could do that, the district court's decision finding some kind of misrepresentation or intimidation was wrong on that issue.
So I have a follow-up on that. What I want to make sure I understand is, with regard to Livingston, that first level of review that he engaged in, was it denied because he didn't provide enough information or because he didn't rewrite it? Or was it denied on the merits because he hadn't signed up?
It was denied. It was twofold. Initially, he got the rewrite decision from the grievance coordinator asking for more information, but then the grievance coordinator called him in and spoke to him. He got some more information, but based on that conversation, he asked Mr. Livingston, did you sign up? He said no. And then the grievance coordinator asked him if the issue had been resolved, and he said it had. So the grievance coordinator believed that he wasn't pursuing the issue, and he never followed up and said, yes, I want to appeal. How do I appeal or anything like that? He just didn't appeal.
So at that point, I guess I'm struggling with what, after he has the interview with the grievance coordinator, what is the rewriting that would even happen?
Because the grievance was resolved informally, he can appeal the level what's called level zero, that initial response, to level one. So he could have submitted a complaint form saying, I disagree and I want to go to level one and continue to pursue the grievance.
So that wouldn't necessarily be a rewriting. It would be a filling out a new form for a new level of review.
I think it would be an appeal of the informal grievance response, essentially.
Can I ask about Lau? So apparently on day eight, the prison started giving him the food he requested. So how has he not exhausted his administrative remedies when he received the relief he requested?
Well, first of all, because that argument hasn't been made either at this court or in the district court, Your Honor. And secondly, because that level one response said, we're not going to accommodate you. Now, apparently the grievance coordinator didn't know that he had been accommodated, but he could have appealed and said, well, I've been accommodated now, but I would like to continue to challenge the policy. But he didn't do that. He took the level one grievance response and didn't pursue it any further. But at a minimum,
what is the mechanism, given the timing of Ramadan and the sign up process, if a prisoner wants to get established that there's a constitutional violation, to have an unreasonably long sign up process?
Well, two things, Your Honor. First of all, the fact that there is a longer sign-up process would actually provide a greater opportunity for someone to challenge the sign-up process itself. So, for example, in January is when the sign-up process took place in 2018, and then there was testimony that they posted a list of inmates who had been signed up and facilitated. If at that point the plaintiffs disagreed with that decision, they had more than adequate time to fully exhaust their administrative remedies, considering 90 days is the maximum before the start of Ramadan.
So how does that work? How does that work? Because you do have prisoners coming in and out of the facility. And in terms of whether that's a reasonable period to be able to sign up and have to challenge, some of those prisoners come in on fairly short notice and they are accommodated or not.
They are, Your Honor. And so I think that there's been some confusion from the plaintiffs about the record on that point, but it's clear that they are. Everybody at the department's facilities signs up through the same process, and then that sign up follows them. So if someone's incarcerated at a different facility and transfers from the Rural Correctional Complex, they get accommodated. If someone comes into the prison system after the sign up period, they get accommodated. And we see that at ER 82 and 83, and then I believe SCR 33, 24, and 25, that talks about those exceptions. Belinda Stewart, the religious program manager's declaration or deposition testimony confirmed that there are people that are accommodated based on the fact they didn't have the opportunity to sign up. In terms of the question of qualified immunity.
Sorry, before you get to that one, I had a question about the emergency grievance process. So my understanding is if the prisoner files an emergency grievance and it's health related, you could appeal it. But if it's an emergency not health related, then it's kicked into the regular process. So, and how can a prisoner appeal that decision of a non-health related emergency grievance without going through the 90-day process?
A non-health emergency grievance. So they can continue to appeal it through the regular grievance process. They can complain about the fact that it was treated as a non-emergency versus an emergency grievance in the grievance process. And that was confirmed by the deposition testimony of the offender grievance program manager at SCR 128 and 129. And that's also clear from the grievance program manual, which is it's 282, talks about how at the next level you can confirm, you can appeal an inadequate response to a previous level of the grievance.
But so that's my question. If the injury is occurring, and even though it's not a health related injury, it seems like it's an odd situation that the prisoner has no recourse but to wait to sustain the injury for the full 90 days and then go to court. Is that your position?
I think that that's the correct interpretation of the law. I think the primary position or problem for the plaintiffs, Your Honor, is that they weren't in the midst of pursuing the grievance process when they filed their lawsuit. And other than James, everyone else had abandoned the process. So at a minimum, if you assume that there's some kind of emergency exception, which I don't think is very clear in terms of whether the Supreme Court's ever endorsed that idea, at a minimum, that rule should require someone being actively involved in the process. And none of the plaintiffs were. The four original plaintiffs had already abandoned the process. John James was added later in the lawsuit, but he was still exhausting at the time of the amended complaint. So I think that's the fundamental problem for plaintiffs on the exhaustion argument.
Let me ask you just again, let me go back to Mr. Livingston just to understand, because the district court on that found a material issue of fact with respect to intimidation on the filing of the grievance process. What is your position with respect to the district court's finding?
I think that is an error and a basis for this court to affirm on other grounds. Again, I think it was waived. I don't see that being argued either in the district court or below in terms of Mr. Livingston being intimidated. And I don't know what that would be in terms of him being intimidated.
Well, when you say it was waived, when the district court says looking at the record, which the district court's entitled to do on a summary judgment, I'm not sure where the waiver comes in, because the district court talks about records indicate Livingston had signed up, et cetera. He had observance of Ramadan was obstructed by administrative ineptitude. So the district court made a finding on that. So I don't think waiver would be the correct response.
Well, then if the court does a de novo review, Your Honor, I think it would have to identify something that Mr. Livingston is claiming that intimidated him from using the grievance process. And for Livingston, there's nothing in the record about anyone threatening him or saying don't use the grievance process or anything like that. So on the grounds of intimidation, I don't think it's factually supported even on a de novo review.
Thank you.
In terms of qualified immunity, I think that the law is not clearly established at a high level, and even looking closely at the Turner factors, at a high level, this court's decision in Resnick versus Adams and the Seventh Circuit's unpublished decision in Riley versus Ewing both establish that there is some permissibility to use a sign-up process to accommodate people who wish to have religious meals. After Resnick, this court hasn't revisited that issue in any published opinion, and there's no case law, and there's no robust consensus of authority that says prison officials violate the First Amendment by having an enforceable sign-up process. Even if you look at it in Turner, I want to just talk about the evidence presented in terms of why this process exists really quickly. The department's Ramadan meal program accommodates 500 people. That is a significant increase of the number of people who are on halal meals normally, which is about 100. The department has to continue to feed 17,500 individuals across 5 standard diets and 10 therapeutic diets during the course of Ramadan, while also accommodating things like Passover. Each year, Passover and Ramadan get closer and closer. In 2021, they will overlap. So they're facilitating the meal programs simultaneously. The department's experience in having a less enforceable sign-up deadline is problematic. In Passover 2016, at SCR 72, there's a discussion about what happened with Passover one year. They had 260 inmates on kosher diet. 1,800 signed up to participate in Passover. So an increase of 9 times the number of inmates. If that were to happen in the course of a Ramadan meal program, the department would not be able to facilitate its Ramadan meal program. Here, we would ask simply that the court affirm the district court's dismissal on summary judgment.
Thank you. Mr. Abbas?
unmute myself. Counsel for the appellees says today that, yeah, we have the sign-up process and it's so important, but in the nature of a prison with people coming and going, we all the time provide exceptions to people based on its sign-up process. All the time, every day. They provide an exception to Naeem Lau when they saw that he was stumbling about. They can do this and they just don't want to do this. And that is not consistent with the law.
Well, I'm going to ask you, it might be that they can't do that with 5, 6, 800 or 1900 people. So my question is this, what is the precise constitutional violation in your characterization that we would be looking at here? How would it be defined?
Well, you have the four Turner factors, but I think that the law that's being violated is that the religious diet is being withheld without penological justification. That there's no penological reason why they can't provide these people food of some kind. There's no penological reason why they can't order more food, or they're all frozen. It's not going to go to waste. And so I think that is the specific law on the free exercise clause that they're violating. And I just wanted to make one, I know I'm beyond time, but just one comment on John James. Year after year, John James was provided gluten-filled food just during the month of Ramadan. 11 months of the year, he was provided a gluten-free meal. He exhausted through all three levels of the grievance process in 2015. He exhausted again all through every level of the grievance process in 2017. And yet, the appellees again today, as they have throughout this proceeding, argue that we should ignore, this court should ignore all those grievances and not adjudicate the fact that the Washington Department of Corrections refuses to provide John James with gluten-free meals as the Constitution requires. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. I'd like to thank both counsel for the argument today. It's very helpful. The case just argued is submitted, Roberts versus Sinclair, and we'll now hear argument in Landis versus the Washington State Major League Baseball Stadium Public Facilities District. Thank you.